Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on this Saturday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along. And you may have noticed from listening to the Book Club at 91.7 that we frequently enjoy finding books about libations. We've done Hello Wine and the Beer Bible, and today we're talking tequila. On the phone with me is Chantal Martineau, who is the author of How the Gringos Stole Tequila, the Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. Chantal, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for having me.
So you spent the last 5 years immersing yourself in the world of tequila. Lucky girl, how'd you get that assignment, and why did you decide to pursue the history of tequila?
Well, I took it on volition, I should say. I'm a writer. I write about wine and spirits for a living. I've always been a big wine lover, and I'm always drawn to wines that really have this sense of place. In the wine world, they use the French word terroir for it. It means, you know, that the wine reflects the place that it's from, the soil, the climate, all that. And the first time I had a really good tequila, I immediately realized that this was a spirit that could express the same sort of thing that wine does, this idea of terroir. I was immediately drawn in.
Well, and you say in the book, and I think more than once, Chantal, that we, most of us have, of course, had a bad shot of tequila, but you're talking about the real stuff here. Define tequila and what sets a good tequila apart from a bad tequila.
Well, make no mistake, I've had plenty of the bad stuff as well. I think everyone has, with the shots and the lime and the salt. A good tequila, you should not have to have any of that extra stuff with it. A good tequila, generally speaking, is made of 100% agave, as opposed to what you might take in a shot. A lower grade tequila tends to be what you call mixto. So only 50% agave, which is that plant that the tequila is made from. It looks like a big aloe. And the other 49% could be anything, any kind of sugar. So that's really the main difference, I would say.
Now, tequila goes back centuries when it comes to being cultivated, cultivated and distilled in Mexico, but it's rather recent here in the U.S. Go back to the beginning, because I love in your book How the Gringos Stole Tequila, how you talk about how much of a part of the culture it is there south of the border.
Yeah, well, it really starts with the plant itself, this agave plant. It's an amazing plant, and early tribes in Mexico have been consuming the plant for 11,000 years, evidence shows. So they used to eat it. They fermented it into a drink called pulque, which is sort of the precursor to tequila, the same way beer is the precursor to whiskey. And they have been distilling it the story is that they've been distilling it since the Spanish brought distillation technology to Mexico. But there is evidence that shows that they may have been distilling agave before the Spanish ever arrived. That evidence is currently being tested, let's say.
They're arguing about it and trying to determine if it's true, right?
They are. There are scientists hard at work right now trying to figure out when distillation began in Mexico.
I'm speaking with Chantal Martineau about her book, How the Gringos Stole Tequila, the Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. And it is something that's rather new. I didn't, you know, I've noticed, of course, how much its popularity has exploded here in the United States in the last couple of decades. But the popularity of tequila here in the U.S. is, faced with that 11,000 years in Mexico, very new.
Comparatively, yes. The first tequilas were brought over in the 19th century. You know, by the big names that you've heard of, the Cuervos and the Salsas, and it caught on pretty quickly. There have been different, the popularity of tequila has sort of ebbed and flowed over the last 100 years here in the U.S. During Prohibition here in the U.S., tequila was being smuggled across the border, the southern states, Then, you know, in the 50s, you have the song Tequila,
Yes.
which really did spur its popularity. By the 70s, you know, everybody knew what it was. People were drinking margaritas already. And then by the 90s, it was just a staple of, you know, frat parties and spring break. That was really the tequila boom.
You mentioned Cuervo there, and Jose Cuervo is not just a commercial name. The Cuervo was the first name in tequila, I suppose you could say.
The first big name, yeah, definitely. The Cuervos have kept the company in the family, more or less. It's been passed on through the generations since the 1800s. Since the late 1700s, and usually passed down as a dowry, too. So passed down to whatever man married into the family as a dowry.
And really, that's how tequila has been made in Mexico for so many years. It's almost like the small local wineries around Europe, much the same for tequila, correct?
Well, the way tequila has been made has changed quite a bit in the last, really recently, in the last couple of decades. It used to be really just another mezcal. You may have heard of mezcal, the precursor to tequila. Tequila used to be just one of the many mezcals, which were just agave spirits made around the country. Tequila is a town in the state of Jalisco, just the same way champagne is a real place and cognac is a real place. The mezcal from tequila came to be known as tequila. And in recent years, tequila production has changed. You've seen a move from the traditional cooking in brick ovens to cooking in machines. So there are machines that one type of machine cooks sort of like a pressure cooker. And then there are even more technologically intricate machines that sort of flash cook the agave. So the production processes have definitely changed over time and modernized and become more mechanized over time.
And you mentioned terroir already, and it seems that people have noticed when it's gone from that traditional method of production to the new modern method for any number of reasons, the type of water used or whether it's crushed in the under the stone wheel or in those mechanical devices, that those small things can make a difference when it comes to that final taste of the tequila.
Absolutely. Like wine, like anything, tequila has its purists and its traditionalists, and there are some people who will only drink tequila made in the traditional way. You mentioned the stone wheel called the Tejona. This is this ancient stone mill made with it's a 2-ton volcanic stone wheel that gets pulled around a pit and slowly crushes the cooked agave. It's an incredibly time-consuming, labor-intensive process that only a handful of distilleries still use. But when you taste the tequila that has been made from agave crushed in a Tejona, it is incredibly different from anything else. It is richer and fuller and sweeter somehow. Really good stuff.
Well, you mentioned before the mixto, and that is a big fact that I learned from reading your book, How the Gringos Stole Tequila. The fact that good tequila tastes good because it's not a mix of tequila and something else, that it is the straight tequila that has a very distinct flavor and a flavor of its own, depending on where it was manufactured and distilled. But this is too often in this mass market world we live in, we are getting that mixto that's not really true tequila. How can you determine what is a true tequila?
Well, it's written right on the bottle, 100% agave. But, you know, you talk about this world that we're living in. You can have 100% agave tequila that doesn't necessarily reflect a specific terroir. Take, for example, you know, a Patron that is a huge, huge producer, and they produce a high-end 100% agave tequila. However, there is no way they can get enough agave from, you know, the small village that they're in to produce all the tequila that they make. So they have to buy tequila from all around the state of Jalisco, all around the appellation of tequila. And so it doesn't necessarily reflect a particular terroir the way, say, a small brand that is making their tequila from the agaves that grow nearby, they can really reflect the soil and the climate of that particular place.
I'm talking to Chantal Martineau about her book, How the Gringo Stole Tequila, The Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And you mentioned Patron, and you talk a lot about Patron here, that while it is very popular, highly popular, I imagine it has done quite a bit in enhancing the love of tequila here in the U.S., just because it is a good tequila.
Absolutely. I think it's a very good starter tequila. In the book, I call it the Starbucks of tequila.
I thought that was good.
Just like there are coffee geeks who, you know, they got their start drinking Starbucks, and then they moved on to, you know, more intricate stuff. And it's the same with tequila. However, you have to give Patron their due. They were charging $50 a bottle for tequila at a time when it was still considered just this harsh thing that you only drank to get drunk on.
So, Chantal, I was wondering what you feel is most misunderstood about tequila.
Well, I still get people when they hear I wrote a book about tequila, the first thing they say to me is, oh, I can't drink that stuff. I got drunk on it, you know, when I was in college or 20 years ago, and I'll never touch it again. And I have to patiently take a breath and say, well, first of all, what you had was probably not true good tequila. Almost for sure it wasn't. And secondly, the way you took it, you know, with lime and salt, probably many shots in a row, is not really the way that you should be drinking it. And, you know, if the person is open-minded enough, I might suggest that they try tequila again, a really nice 100% agave tequila, maybe, you know, sip it neat or in a really simple margarita with, like, fresh lime juice and agave nectar.
And
my advice.
and you provide more advice in your book too, Chantal, because you have an appendix that has, 99 tequilas and mezcals to try before you die.
I could have probably done a couple more, but it's a good start. Yeah.
And these are ones that are reasonably easy to find. And I was very surprised as I went through the list, Chantal, that they vary in price. Well, you mentioned the $40 or $50 for Patron up to, well, here's one I turned to that's $225. And it, I guess, do you really get what you pay for when it comes to tequila?
Well, that's a good question. I actually don't think you should pay $225 for a bottle of tequila. There may be one or two in there that are that expensive. But generally when you see a bottle of tequila with a huge price tag, you are paying for the bottle. You're paying for all the marketing surrounding the tequila. Sometimes some of the aged tequilas are that expensive because, you know, aging any spirit is expensive. You need the facility to store the barrels. You have to wait to sell it. You know, the distiller can't make any money for the number of years that it's being aged. So all that is reflected in the price. But then, you know, I'm a Blanco girl, so I don't drink a lot of aged tequilas. I included them in there, and I urge people to try them. They can be really fun, you know, at the end of a meal kind of thing. But I like to drink tequila as it comes off the still, as it is naturally, unaged, Blanco, clear, really reflecting that agave ingredient, the base ingredient. That's how I like to drink.
Well, Chantal, I appreciate all the stories you brought in the book and all the thought-provoking aspects of tequila that I'll have to chew on and perhaps sip here in the not-so-distant future. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Chantal Martineau. Her book is How the Gringo Stole Tequila, the Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. That does include that appendix of 99 tequilas and mezcals to try before you die. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.